Congress is back Wednesday after a short New Year's Day break, with no signs of a workable plan to end a 12-day-old partial government shutdown. President Donald Trump, who's not budging on his demand for $5 billion in border wall funding, has invited top Democratic and Republican leaders in Congress to the White House Wednesday for what sources say is a border security briefing.
Wall Street kicked off the new year with a volatile session Wednesday. While all the major benchmarks finished in the green on the first trading day of the year, the Dow saw some wild swings, dropping nearly 400 points early on before recovering its losses and teetering between positive and negative territory for the rest of the session.
Shares of Tesla sank Wednesday, falling as much as 10% at one point after the company announced it's cutting the prices for all its cars in the U.S. by $2,000. The move comes after a federal tax credit for electric vehicles was cut in half at the end of 2018, part of a major tax overhaul passed by the Republican-controlled Congress in 2017. In a Saturday tweet, CEO Elon Musk had urged buyers to make use of the $7,500 tax credit before it got slashed.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's January 3rd, 2019, 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for being here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We've put together a really good broadcast for your Thursday today. Of course, it's Thought Leader Thursday. Greg Warsak will be here from Associated Bank to talk a little bit about commercial real estate trends. We'll have Greg in our first segment this morning. A little bit later on in the program, workplace injuries, dangerous. Lots of occupations remain dangerous. And we're going to be talking to the author of a study who's looking into this. $130 billion of lost productivity yearly due to health-related costs, lost productivity costs. Dr. Laura Cavuto will be here with us at 5:40 this morning to talk a little bit more about this. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are pointing toward another week open on Wall Street this morning, with Dow futures off nearly 1.5%, down 369 points. It's going to be a rough day for the NASDAQ as well. NASDAQ futures off nearly 3% this morning, nearly 173%. $173 points, I should say. The S&P futures are lower by about 1.5% as well. The big story this morning involving Apple in the tech sector. Investors are going to be keeping a close eye on Apple stock after the company lowered its forecast for holiday sales by at least $5 billion. The tech giant yesterday saying it now expects fiscal first quarter revenue of about $84 billion, citing economic deceleration in China. CEO Tim Cook says the company underestimated the impact of the U.S. trade dispute with China. And in a letter to shareholders, he noted that over 100% of Apple's worldwide revenue decline happened in Greater China across iPhone, Mac, and iPad. After hours trading in Apple stock was halted just ahead of the announcement yesterday. So a rough day for the tech sector and Apple specifically today. Also on the markets in Asia, where the Nikkei is closed for a bank holiday today, the Hang Seng is lower by about 0.25%. The Shanghai is off just a fraction. And in Europe, markets also in the red, with the markets in London off by about 1/3, in Germany by 1.25%, and in France by about 1%. Oil is trading this morning at $46.18 a barrel, which is down about 0.75% or 36 cents. Couple of stories, more stories that we're watching in addition to the Apple story today. Today's economics reports will focus on a wide range of economic activity. Front and center will be the ADP private payrolls report for December, leading things off at about 7:15 Chicago time, ahead of the jobs report tomorrow for December. Oil prices sliding under a surge in supplies and signs of slowing in the global economy. West Texas Intermediate crude down about 93 cents a barrel to 45.61, as we mentioned. International benchmark crude off about 60 cents. Production is up in Russia, Iraq, and the U.S., which is now the world's number one oil producer. And President Trump is calling December's turmoil on Wall Street a glitch. Speaking at the White House yesterday, the president said financial markets will settle down once new trade deals are secured. Trump has previously blamed the Federal Reserve for the tumbling stock market due to rising interest rates. He has also publicly chastised Fed Chair Jerome Powell, who he picked to replace Janet Yellen last year. A lot of economists, though, are also blaming the trade disputes with China for having a big role in what's happening on Wall Street. We begin front and center this morning with our thought leader conversation. This morning, Greg Warsek talks to Bennett Wakenight, our executive producer here on the program. They sat down together just before the holiday to talk about the commercial real estate market, the year gone, and the year ahead.
Greg, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Well, good morning, Bennett. Great to be here. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. Hopefully your holidays were festive and celebratory, and you're ready for the new year.
I'm ready. It was great.
2019, just gearing up, a few days in under our belts, but I think there was enough happening in 2018 that we can also take a brief look back before we dive into moving forward and going to 2019. So let's revisit a few of the major shakers going on in the industry as far as commercial real estate. There were a few things that we pointed out. First off, it was a pretty straightforward year. You know, interest rates were on everyone's radars. It wasn't super surprising as far as the ebbs and flows. But what stood out to you as one of the top movers and shakers as far as going on in the commercial real estate industry in 2018?
You know, I guess my biggest takeaway from 2018 in terms of interest rates were that coming into the year, I think there was some concerns about the Fed's desire to increase rates to keep inflation under control. And the reality is, despite those increases, real estate developers kept chugging along. It did not slow anything down. It was a very strong year again from a loan demand perspective. There was a lot of new projects going on, a lot of properties changing hands. So, you know, short-term rates were at historical lows. And I think the savvy real estate developers understood that, you know, 25, 50, 75 basis point increases still at the end of the day, that's a good rate on the loans that they're paying. And even looking forward, you know, into 19, I think it's going to be more of the same. I don't think there's any forecasted rate increases that are going to subside, create any dampening of if you will, on loan demand and new projects that are going.
Sure. It seemed like with the larger picture of the economy, everyone's really kind of focused either on, you know, what's going on in Wall Street or, you know, residential interest rates, that impact. But it seemed like you said, commercial real estate was able to just kind of truck along, move forward and get everything done that needed to get done.
Yeah, absolutely.
So another one of the aspects that we pointed out for and touched on earlier on in the year of 2018, retail bankruptcies. We saw a lot of companies come and go, some really big ones like Toys R Us, Payless, H.H. Gregg. But it noted in a report that last year in 2017, 21 major retail bankruptcies occurred, but in 2018, only 15 occurred. So is that leading us down a better road, or is that, you know, something that just kind of ebbs and flows and we just kind of take a look at?
I think it's more of a kind of an ebb and flow kind of thing. You know, if you didn't know that statistic, you would swear that in 2018, given the level of press around bankruptcies and especially Sears, you would swear there was, you know, two times as many in 2018 that as in 2017. And the reality is that, you know, the retail business is changing every year. There's bankruptcies in good times and bad with retail. It's models that have run their course and people go out of business, but there's new ones to take their place. And so, you know, I think it is a sort of an ebb and flow. I think the disruption, like with Sears and TJ Maxx, create opportunities. You know, it's retail's going to be different in the future. And so the savvy retail developers that we work with, they look at this as opportunity. They don't get too concerned. And frankly, that's our position as well. We're seeing it as an opportunity to finance new projects, reposition projects. And there's a lot of interesting ones out there that we're looking at.
Yeah. There was actually a report a couple of weeks ago showing from, I believe it was from Cranes, showing that all of these vacancies in malls they're getting turned into something that was before a commercial real estate development was now turning into apartments, because they say we have all this space, we have all this demand. Why not? This is something that we can capitalize on.
Yeah, it's You know, we're working on a project right now that we did for a client up in suburban Milwaukee where they tore down the Sears store as part of that mall. It's in Brookfield, and they're putting up a theater, a whirly ball, and a bunch of restaurants, fast casual and nice restaurants, creating an entertainment venue and a big draw, really. And it's just repositioning a great asset with, you know, phenomenal demographics around it. You know, a similar example would be here in Chicago in Northbrook. You got Northbrook Mall, great real estate, surrounded, you know, great demographics, rooftops all around. You know, that's going to be a reposition that I think is going to be very successful. It's going to incorporate a lot of different uses.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be on the big radar as far as all that. And leading into that, a lot of the commercial space that was on the radar was the shift from the suburban areas to the downtown areas, and that was another big factor in 2018 as well.
Yeah, I think there's going to be, you're going to continue to see that. There's a big push to move into the CBD. A lot of the millennials, and not just the millennials, it's the new generation coming behind them that are focused on living in the city, and that's where that talent is. So I think that's always going to be a component. But it's interesting, we're actually starting to see trends where the millennials that are in their 30s are starting to move out to the suburbs. They don't move out too far, but it's interesting, you know, looking at train lines, distance, commute times, good school districts, that inner circle is going to be a high growth area.
Sure. And speaking of, you know, going forward, we'll take a look now at 2019 and what we see on the horizon and what trends are popping up as they continue to move along. One of the from an article that we were able to pull, one of the big ones that I know you and Steve touched on earlier in last year were opportunity zones, and those being a big boom for investors, but also, you know, surrounding neighborhoods and areas as well.
It'll be interesting to see how that plays out in 2019, because in late 2018 there was finally some guidance from the federal government on how that was going to look. And so people read it, they're digesting it, they're trying to figure out how to execute on it. So I think that a lot of that's going to play out in 2019, and you're going to start seeing funds created. There's a lot of capital out there that's looking at this as a huge opportunity. So it could be a game changer in some areas that in need of development. So that's definitely one to monitor in 2019. That could be an interesting one.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be, you know, that side of investing, you know, from a larger perspective and from a you know, more consumer perspective, that people want to make sure their business is impacting good and doing everything they can to help everything out. So another trend that we've taken a look at going on in 2019 is online retailers continuing to open brick and mortar stores. That's whether it's a pop-up shop or a more permanent establishment like an Amazon Go store we were talking about a little bit earlier.
Right. I think that's, again, the retail industry trying to figure out that equilibrium, trying to figure out their omni-channel delivery in terms of their brick and mortar with their e-commerce component. I don't think it's one or the other. I think there's some sort of complement, and I think a lot of the successful retailers that are thoughtful in their approach to their business model are trying to figure out that balance right now. So, you know, a lot of the news in 17 and 18 was, oh my gosh, the sky is falling, e-commerce is coming, and all retail's going to be gone. Obviously overblown by the press. So, you know, there were closures, there were businesses that were impacted by e-commerce to some extent, but I think the savvy retailers are in 19 will continue to find that equilibrium, if you will, and there's going to be new bricks and mortar coming as a result of that.
Sure. And I was fascinated watching throughout the year of the pop-up side of brick and mortar, where a company might be or a product might be in a space for 2 or 3 months and then back to the online presence as to what they're known best for. How has that impacted, if at all, the way that brick and mortar has been looked at from a commercial space?
You know, that's a good question. We see that in some of the projects that we finance where a tenant will come in short term, generally around the holidays. But a lot of it for them is testing. You know, instead of making the capital investment or lease commitment, the new concept now is to come in as a pop-up, test it, see how it goes at that location and maybe others, before rolling out a broader program.
Yeah, that's Steve Grzanich actually earlier in the year, he was talking to Tovala, which we were talking about off mic. That was one of the ways that they got their product out to the people and how they were planning to move things forward. If there was a demand, they would jump up and find a space and they would say, hey, we're here. And they would, you know, based on what their customers were saying, that's how they would kind of approach their real estate, which is a new way of going about things, I feel like.
Well, I think it's a smart approach. Again, sure. You know, why make the capital investment until you're sure that there's a payoff? You have landlords that are willing to be flexible and test it. What's in it for the landlord? If it works in that location, they end up executing a longer-term lease. Yeah. Why not? It's a vacant space anyway.
It's a win-win. Another one of the larger space conversations for commercial real estate were the co-working spaces. We saw a ton of those throughout the year, not just in Chicago, all across the country. WeWork announced a couple of weeks ago that they're opening up their ninth office in 2019, and they have over 500,000 square feet in Chicago alone of space that businesses use, you know, independent contractors, startups. It's a wild world out there for the co-working space.
It really is. And it's not just WeWork. There are a lot of companies
right.
out there, and they now control an amazing amount of space in downtown Chicago. And it's hard to tell how that's all going to shake out. You know, if there's a downturn, what happens? And, you know, from a lending perspective, that's what we're always trying to figure out is if we're financing an office building, frankly, we don't want to have too much. We don't want to see the landlord too committed to this co-work space just because it's unproven in a downturn. But so far, it seems to be working really well because the value proposition for a company is that flexibility. Yeah. Again, getting back to the pop-ups on the retail side, really no different. You can come into a WeWork short-term, you know, see how it goes as you're building the office. The piece that resonated with me in 2018 was the fact that CBRE made the commitment to create a business around it. And that's smart, institutional, savvy real estate people saying, this isn't going away. We see this as the future.
Right.
So now, to me, there's real credibility to this space.
Yeah, it's on the mainstream that everyone, you know, can get involved in.
Exactly.
So any other things or trends or factors that are a little bit on your radar as we move forward into 2019 that we should know about?
You know, everything I read kind of leading into this year was that 19 was going to be a lot of the same.
Yeah.
Steady as she goes. I mean, the CBRE forecast for 2019 is that it was very optimistic despite all the noise out there with negative indicators and when's the downturn coming. There's still an awful lot of strong other indicators which suggest that that downturn isn't coming. So I think everybody's trying to predict and stay ahead of that. In the meantime, there's just too many good deals that are out there that people just can't pass up. And so we still are bullish on 2019.
Greg, how can people get in touch with you or your team and have a similar conversation about this?
The best way to reach me is always email, always available, greg.worsak@associatedbank.com.
Perfect, Greg. Thanks so much for coming in, and happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Bennett.
Now, that's Greg Worsak, the Senior Vice President and Regional Manager for the Chicago Market for Commercial Real Estate at Associated Bank with WGN's Bennett Wakenight. It's our thought leader conversation. Remember, you can listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the Opening Bell page and follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter, and also head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership for more conversations and more on our thought leaders.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us in our Thursday edition of the Opening Bell. A new study shows manufacturing employees reporting more than half of manufacturing employees reporting workplace fatigue as a problem affecting them. And this is a costly problem for businesses as well, losing more than $100 billion a year
to health-related productivity loss. Joining us this morning is Dr. Laura Cavuto, associate professor at the University of Buffalo and author of the study called Advancing Safety Surveillance Using Individualized Sensor Technology, Study on Workplace Fatigue. Dr. Cavuto, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning.
I want to talk first about, you know, the kinds of things that we're talking about here to sort of set the stage. When we talk about workplace fatigue, what is it generally that we're referring to?
So it can be a few different things. There's sleep-related fatigue, where individuals are not getting enough sleep during their off times from work. And then there's also fatigue as a result of the work that individuals are doing from extended shifts that they might be working, or working during off cycles, like in the evenings or nighttime, or doing heavy, physically demanding work.
We've often heard the reports of people, especially truck drivers, having this big fatigue problem, construction workers too, but this study covers a gamut of manufacturing employees, does it not?
Yes, correct. We looked at manufacturing workers across the United States in our survey.
So tell us what the lead findings are here and why this is important to address moving forward.
Yes, so we showed, as you mentioned, that more than half of individuals are reporting that they're somewhat fatigued in the last week. And some of the areas where they're experiencing problems are at their feet, at their low back, and in their eyes. So some strain related to the work and caused by stress and the shift schedule that they're working were some of the top causes of what people were indicating leading to their fatigue. And the individuals don't have a lot of coping mechanisms that they're able to do. So we found from our survey that individuals would try to maybe drink some coffee or stretch or do exercises or talk to each other. But those aren't long-term sustainable solutions at the workplace level. So in looking more broadly, tried to see how we can identify when individuals are becoming fatigued. So we identified that wearable sensors can be used to detect changes in behavior and try to pinpoint when individuals are becoming fatigued. And then we've also looked at the types of interventions that are available. And the research shows that still rest breaks and time away from work is the best documented solution for addressing fatigue. And so we need to work in appropriate amounts of rest breaks into the work schedule so that individuals have a chance for their body to recover.
I want to hit a couple of things there. Let's talk first about the sensors. Wearable technology, I think we're all getting used to this now, wearing our Fitbits and other technology. Is that the kind of thing that we're talking about? Would it be technology that sort of senses a heart rate, or is it a sensor that maybe is a body camera?
A little bit more advanced than a Fitbit in terms of heart rate. It's one of the measures that we looked at, as well as detailed motions of how much motion an individual is doing, as well as the postures that they're using over the course of the day. So we had a sensor wrapped up or attached to the ankle, so similar to a Fitbit, but around your ankle, and then a heart rate sensor that tracks the change in heart rate over time.
You mentioned that people are coming to work sleepy. That's a big problem, I think, for a lot of different industries. How can that be addressed in a larger way to not only, you know, protect the workers who are on the job, but make sure that these businesses stop losing so much money?
Yeah, I think key there is in scheduling the shifts and the work so that you allow enough time for good sleep hygiene outside of work, so that individuals can get that 7 to 9 hours away from work. So if you have individuals on night shift, making sure that during the day they have time to address their family lives, but also get enough sleep. And following some good practices in terms of shift rotation and shift length to keep within recommended limits for those two.
And so I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the idea of a double shift or overtime or something like that is probably something that you would frown upon in situations where these workers are in the atmosphere to create the fatigue.
Correct. Most research has shown that they start to see performance impairments after you get past those 10 or 12 hours of a standard shift.
And the idea of taking a break, more breaks, what would that look like? What's the length of a break that someone can take that would help rejuvenate them to the level that it erases some of that fatigue? Are we talking 15 minutes, 20 minutes? What would be the time limit?
It can be short breaks placed over the course of the day. And they don't need to be full rest breaks. With regards to the physical fatigue. So you could alternate or rotate from a physically demanding task to a more maybe sedentary or mentally demanding task. So take some time to do paperwork or reporting or cleanup of a workstation to give the body a rest but still have some productive output from it.
What is the challenge moving forward here, Doctor, about getting some of this, some of the recommendations put into the workplace culture? How big of an uphill battle would that be, if at all?
I think the challenge with fatigue is that there's not just one individual small thing that you can change. It's got to be a systems level change. So it's allowing the right shift length, but also working in the breaks and having the time away from work. So I think the challenge is having all of those components in place together and taking a broad systems level approach to solving the problem.
In looking at some of the study information here that we got ahead of our interview this morning, I see that these wearables on the ankle and other places. Are workers going to have a problem with wearing those, and what kinds of new issues might that develop in the workplace where everything that is happening with this worker is being monitored?
Yeah, so I did a survey on that as well, and the biggest concern is privacy. And so it is important to provide information to employees about how the data will be used and also how it will not be used. So I would not encourage using the sensors for things like productivity monitoring and keeping it as a safety and wellness application. And I would also encourage not doing continuous monitoring. So companies should have a targeted maybe period of time that they say we're experiencing some issues at this workstation or in this work group. Let's monitor them in terms of the safety outcomes, come up with solutions, re-monitor to see if the solutions have been effective, and then end the monitoring at that point.
It seems from reading over the study materials and your research that I may know the answer to this question, but this is a problem that seems to now have some viable solutions moving forward. Are you optimistic about maybe cutting down on some of the workplace injuries and other incidents that happen because of fatigue?
Yes, I think awareness has definitely been growing, and I think that was an important first step. So now we understand that fatigue is a problem, and a number of people are invested in working together to solve it. So I'm very hopeful that we will have some solutions going forward.
I had a lot of questions for you this morning. Are there any other takeaways that I missed that you want to make sure that we get across?
No, I think that's good.
All right. Dr. Laura Cavuto, we appreciate you being with us this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
And Dr. Laura Cavuto, associate professor at University of Buffalo and author of this study on workplace fatigue and possible solutions to it. We'll link out to her research in the podcast of The Opening Bell, posted later this morning at WGNradio.com. It's 5:49 now in The Opening Bell. Time to update traffic again this morning. Mary Vandeveld watching you ride into work. Mary?
And looking good so far on the Edens and the Kennedy. No delays on the Eisenhower. Inbound side of the Stevenson, minor delay approaching Harlem now 22 minutes in from the tri-state. Inbound side of the Ryan from 95th at about 16 minutes. Bishop Ford, 57 are both clear. In Riverdale, an accident Indiana Avenue and 135th. And still on the west side, an accident Sacramento and Lake. For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFF. IX Chicago. Mayor Vandeveld, WGN Traffic Central.
Timeless, memorable music is back on the radio
at 87.7 FM.
Great artists,
great songs,
great memories.
Right now on 87.7 FM. The music you've been missing is on 87.7 FM.
MeTV FM.
No heat, no problem. Turn to the furnace experts at ABC Plumbing, Sewer, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. Right now, take advantage of our special holiday offer, and we'll diagnose your furnace issue for just $49. So when you need your furnace fixed fast and fixed right, call ABC at 888-809-6099. That's 888-809-6099, or book online at 4abc.com. And consider it done.
More browsing, more binging, more streaming, more savings. With WOW, you can get super fast internet for $29.99 per month when you add our most popular TV package for just $35 more per month. That's everything you need to keep everyone entertained and save more than $500. Get 100 meg internet for $29.99 per month when you add TV for just $35 more per month with the 2-year agreement. Call 1-866-WOWWAY4 or visit wowway.com to learn more. Offer for new customers subject to change. Restrictions apply.
Did you know that over 90% of male enhancement pills are virtually the same thing that's repackaged, redone over and over again? Why settle for the same old product when you can get something completely different? Something that takes male enhancement into the 21st century. Something that really works. Men, you need to try Noxetril, the all-natural male enhancement formula that will unlock your performance in the bedroom to a level you could only dream of. Try to imagine Viagra on steroids. Noxetril is so powerful, that's why it took years for it to finally become available to the public without a prescription. So call now and take advantage of our special Noxetril free bottle offer today. Oh yeah, we recommend that you use the Noxetril dose as directed. Think of your partner. We certainly don't want you to overperform in the bedroom.
Call now and find out how to get a free bottle of Noxetril while supplies last. Call 1-800-993-2180. That's 800-993-2180. Free bottles for a limited time, so call now. 800-993-2180. 800-993-2180.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGdirect.com.
It takes a lot of courage to face your own death, but I'm glad I finally did. See, I was putting off getting life insurance to protect my family, even though I knew it was important. Then my neighbor's husband died. I watched her struggle emotionally and financially. It really made me face reality. If my husband died, how would I pay the mortgage, the car payments, or keep up the life the kids and I had? I realized I needed to get us life insurance right away. So I called AIG Direct. In less than 5 minutes, I had a quote. I was shocked at how affordable it is. Just $14 a month for $250,000 of term life coverage. I feel so much better knowing my family has protection.
Call AIG Direct right now for a free no-obligation quote. The call takes less than 5 minutes, and you can save up to 70%. Call now, 1-800-900-1904. That's 1-800-900-1904. 1-800-900-1904.
New voices, new perspectives, new platforms.
WGN Plus.
WGN Radio's been around for 95 years. And we're still growing up. WGN Radio in 2019. 95 years young.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, we're watching for the opening bell later this morning. Well into the red. Dow futures off 382 points this morning, nearly 1.5%. NASDAQ futures are off nearly 175 points now, more than 2.5%. S&P futures off nearly 1.5%. Of course, keeping a close eye on Apple after their guidance yesterday and their sales cut for sales forecast cut. Apple shares this morning in the pre-market are down nearly 9.3% heading to the opening bell a little bit later this morning. So it's going to be a rough day, especially for the tech sector. moving forward. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We had weather in the market picture in the soybean market at the Board of Trade yesterday, concerned over the dry weather in Brazil. And Dr. Michael Cordonier, who we turned to for Brazilian and South American estimates, came out yesterday with a soybean estimate that was 2 million tons below the last estimate, putting it at 119 million. And one of the impacts of the hot and dry weather, according to Dr. Mike, has been an acceleration of the soybean maturity in many of the drier areas. Farmers are reporting soybeans maturing 20 to 30 days earlier than anticipated. The corn crop in Brazil, well, that was lowered by a million tons to 94 million tons. And so at the end of the day, the January soybean contract up 12 and a quarter cents, March corn up 0.75 cents, and March wheat up 5 cents a bushel. Livestock trade yesterday at the Mercantile Exchange, mixed market. April lean hogs up 62 cents a hundredweight. February live cattle down 20 cents. And January feeder cattle down 25 cents a hundredweight. The other question I want to answer from a listener who said, what about land prices at the end of 2018? Well, we get a monthly report from the Sterling Land Company, and in December, just a couple of sales that I'll report. The sale in Whiteside County, and it sold for $9,500 an acre, and 169 acres in a private transaction in LaSalle County, December 10th. $10,650 an acre. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of quick stories before we leave you this morning. A price tracking service says the national average for gasoline will surge to about $3 a gallon by May before easing the rest of 2019. I know a lot of you have seen low gas prices here these days, but Gas Buddy's predicting that the full year average price will settle at about $2.70 a gallon. 3 cents lower than 2018. The U.S. average right now is about $2.22 a gallon, down 70 cents from 3 months ago due to lower oil prices. This morning, we'll also be watching Tesla stock. Tesla made about 9,300 more vehicles than it delivered last year, raising concerns among industry analysts that inventory is growing as the demand for the company's electric cars may be starting to wane. If demand fails, they say the company will enter a new phase of business. Like other automakers, Tesla will have to either cut production or reduce prices to raise sales. Drop in demand could also curtail the company's earnings and jeopardize CEO Elon Musk's promise to post sustained quarterly profits. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, January 3rd. Today's economic reports focus on a couple of big things, including jobs and autos. The ADP private payrolls report for December leads off the reports today. Analysts expect to see 175,000 private sector jobs added last month. The weekly look at first-time unemployment benefits is also due out. The forecast is for 217,000 Americans filing initial claims. That would be 1,000 more than last week's report. The November construction spending numbers are being released today. Building industry analysts expect a gain of about 0.2%. In addition to all of that, motor vehicle sales for December will be reported throughout the day. Auto industry experts see easing slightly for November, coming in at an annual rate of about 17.3 million vehicles. We'll also get a look at MBA's mortgage applications numbers and the Challenger job cut report, also due out ahead of the big jobs report tomorrow.